This episode is brought to you by Summer School Electronics. With pedals like the Snow Day Delay, the Pep Rally Fuzz, the Trash Panda, and my personal favorite, the Science Fair, which is two classic dirt pedals in one with a mid-boosted overdrive on one side, a black lab rat circuit on the other, and a blend knob to blend between them to find the perfect classic stacked dirt sound you're looking for, it's hard not to find something you'll love. Mark builds all of his pedals by hand in Syracuse, New York, where he also works as a full-time educator. In addition to the super fun graphics on their pedals, Mark also offers custom artwork. Want your dog's face on a pedal? He can do it. Want your face on a pedal? He can make that happen too. Go over to summerschoolelectronics.com and make sure to tell them that 40 Watt Podcast sent you. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the newest episode of the 40 Watt Podcast. My name is Philip. I am your host. If you expected me to say what episode number this is, you're wrong, because I'm a musician and I count to four. Once we get past there, we're done. I even count five in sets of three and two, so it's weird. Before we get kicked off, I'm going to thank all of my Patreon supporters. You have heard the spiel at the beginning of this episode, if you are not a Patreon supporter, about how important that support is. I'm not going to reiterate that, but if you want to support the podcast, you can go over to 40 Watt. You can go to 40wattpodcast.com, or you can go to patreon.com/40wattpodcast, and you can support the podcast at varying levels. You can do everything from $3, which gets you this episode without any ads. Now, ads, you may ask, there are ads? Yes, there are ads sometimes. As I get supporters and Patreon and ad options, there are ads in the episode. You can skip all those if you just $3 a month. For $5 or more, you get extra content. And at the $50 level, you will get lessons. We will do guitar lessons, bass lessons, keyboard lessons. If you want to learn to play keys or synth or something like that, we'll do it. Or we'll do, actually, my only right now, hey, Blake, my only top-level Patreon supporter, we're actually going through music theory. So I'm teaching music theory using jazz standards and pop tunes. So if you want to learn something, there's a couple of slots left for that. I have to limit that because, y'all, I don't have a lot of time, but I will do it for y'all. Anyway, thank you, Patreon supporters. I'm going to name off my Patreon supporters that I currently have, and I appreciate every single one of you. Bradley Jones, Jordan Glash, Duncan Watson, Andy Johns, David Evangelista of the Guitar Dads Podcast, Blake Jefferson, Nick Call, Andrew Hensley, Alan Gresham, Dan Pilver of Lewitt Audio, Scott Hamilton of the Effects Loop Podcast, Andy Koning, Jim Burns, Tom Kelly, Heath Batt, Ben Fair of Electromotive Sound Company, Rick Calhoun of Honey Picks, Jeffrey Walks, and Kyle Harris. I appreciate all of you. I recently sent out some picks to some of y'all who have been with me for more than a year, which blows my mind. Actually, I got a couple of you who've been with me for 2 years at this point. I can't believe I've been doing this podcast for 2 years. It's mind-boggling. I can't believe y'all keep listening, and thank you for keep going. Now, we're going to move into this episode. That's it. No more shilling, maybe. So this week, I'm super excited. This is an episode I've wanted to happen for a little while, but we haven't been able to connect until now. I've got Mike Pusheen Adams on the show. Mike, how are you, sir?
Hi, I'm well. I'm well. How are you, Philip?
I'm doing well. I want to mention that I love your shirt you're rocking. For you listeners, he is rocking what I like to call the Brady Bunch Star Trek shirt.
That's absolutely what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's got all the characters from Next Generation. My wife and I are going through Next Gen right now. She has never seen any of the Star Trek stuff.
What a beautiful thing to do with your spouse.
Right?
Oh, so it's going to bring y'all closer together.
I think it already has. I think it already has. What? So we've been doing it slowly. We've been going an episode or two a night as we have time.
Okay.
And so we're in season seven now, though. We're in the home stretch.
What was your favorite overall season so far? What did you two really resonate with?
So Star Trek is such an interesting show because it started out, they didn't really know what to do with it. And you can feel it. You can feel it. That first, like, 2.5 seasons.
Yeah.
I won't call it a train wreck because it's not, but you can tell that they didn't know what to do with the uniforms alone. got better after that.
Oh, because yeah,
they
didn't
know what they were doing.
Yeah, and some of those scripts are rumored to be leftovers that never got filmed for the original series. That were reworked, stuff like that.
Which
like the
you
naked
can feel.
Now, you can totally feel like where everybody catches a horny virus and. That's the second episode, and you're like, okay, let's
you see mean the entire goes. Point of Will Riker?
The entire point of Will Riker. A character who he has some episodes in retrospect that I watch now through a completely different lens, like A Matter of Perspective. I think that's season 3 or 4 where a science space station blows up and the wife of the scientist accuses Riker of killing her husband. And so they have a trial. Going through perspective of the events and then his perspective of the same events. And, you know, at one point I got an in with Star Trek, like Paramount, looking for writers. And I got to pitch to them and I pitched my idea of discussing openly, Will Riker as a character and how certain aspects of that character may not have aged so well, like his womanizing, for example, centered around that episode. And they were like, do you have anything else? So
like, yeah, they're not ready to go that route.
Yeah, but it's one of my favorite episodes because it is like watching it as an adult and seeing, you know, like what is clearly like almost a cartoonish version of Will Riker, like constantly hands on her and pulling her towards him constantly. But then his version of events is totally squeaky clean. Nothing improper happened. No, of course I didn't leer at her all the time. And it's very interesting. And you like I come away from that episode every time thinking that there is truth to both. And it's right in the middle because you watch the other episodes and you always see Riker like walking out of some ensign's room, like like pulling his uniform down shit. Like
it's so interesting. It's the whole Captain Kirk. But they knew they couldn't do that with Patrick Stewart, not because he wasn't an attractive man.
Dude, he just didn't hot.
Yeah, exactly. But he didn't have the stereotype, right? He didn't fit the stereotype. And so number one, or the first officer, had to fill that role a little bit. And it's interesting by the point we're in, and I'm sorry, listeners, I realize we've turned into the Star Trek podcast. It's okay.
Too late.
You'll be all right. We're going to do this for a minute. there's this point where in season 6, as we were going through season 6, and I can't really pick a favorite season. I think I might like with the lens of I haven't rewatched 7 in a long, long, long time, so I need to get through 7. I think 6 might be my favorite because I feel like the characters have developed the most by then.
Yeah, so much
they're
good
kind
stuff.
Of, they're actually, it's one of the opposite of things that normally happens to a show. Normally, shows start out and sometimes they have great characters. And then they lose where they want to go with them, or they've explored all the things and they become two dimensional by a 6th season. Mm-hmm. Whereas I feel like Star Trek Next Gen did the opposite. They really started kind of flat.
Oh yeah,
and then sort of became really complex characters by season 6.
And they have fun with it too. Like I'm looking at the list of episodes. It starts out with Time's Arrow Part 2, which is my favorite two-parter of the whole season or the whole series, where they go back in time. They hang with Mark Twain. Lady Guinan, I couldn't help but overhear. Like that guy. Oh my god, he's so good. And then you got Relics with Scotty. They find Scotty in the transporter buffer of the ship wrecked on a Dyson sphere. You got Schisms. Like, you got Rascals, which is a fun episode if you like fun. A Fistful of Data's, like, they go off the rails in season 6, but it's
they
good.
Do. Season 6 gets wild, and they give you just the right amount of nostalgia for the original series and some of the movies as you go.
Yep.
That it's like, it's the right fan service. It's not ham-fisted.
Yep.
And I really appreciate that episode with Guinan and the whole two-parter where they go back in time and where it's like where she's like it's this weird not shows don't do time travel well usually.
Not usually, but
they have this whole conversation where she's talking to Picard and she's like, "Do you remember when we first met?" And he's like, "Of course. Don't be so sure."
Yeah.
And
that's
like
awesome.
It's so cool.
It's like Who with River Song. It's like there.
Yes.
I'm looking at the list of episodes. And
it's so
banger
good.
After banger. Ship in a Bottle. Tapestry. You got Starship Mine. You got Suspicions.
I miss shows that give you 26 episodes in a season.
Yeah, Timescape. You know what I also miss is that TV shows are scared of filler now. And mm-hmm. and there are episodes that are like, it's okay to have a big dramatic thing and the next episode is Data has to learn to fucking dance for Conan O'Brien, Chief O'Brien's wedding. Like, yeah. Like that's great. It's good to have episodes where nothing really happens, but the characters grow. They evolve a little bit. They
have it's just fun.
Keiko has a little meltdown. That's okay. We're going to deal with it. Like, I love these long seasons compared to like, you know, I didn't really care for Picard seasons 1 and 2. 3 was actually like those first 4 episodes were excellent. I thought
I've heard second season is not really great.
I just couldn't get on with either the first or the second, but the third one has some good stuff in it. And but it's still only 10 episodes, and you feel like every like really deep character moment, at least I feel this way, that when the deep character moments happen, they feel rushed or it feels like you didn't have enough time to earn it. Like they have to so quickly have their conflict and then have a heart-to-heart out in the hallway, like you got to space that stuff out.
You really do.
Back. I'm not a return guy, but I'm totally a return guy for long seasons of TV shows.
Like, I want them. That's what I want real bad.
I want it.
It's sort of like actually it was the I think it was the downfall fall of The Walking Dead, which by the way I never completely finished.
Man.
But Walking Dead tried to bring back some of that.
Yeah.
You know, character development, the lull episodes where it's like, hey, we sort of need to tell some story here to get you back to the action point. Yep. I think they swung the pendulum too far and had too much lull.
Yeah, they did not balance it. And by the time you got to the, was it the 5th season where Negan is introduced? Like,
yeah.
By that point, it just felt like the writers were having too much fun killing off characters, and that's not interesting to me. Like, the who's going to die this time question is never interesting to me. It can be a great narrative device, but like,
yeah,
I don't know. I'm not here to watch a contest. Like I'm here to see people. Yeah. Deal with
look at
with
all
impossible
look at
odds.
All 6 seasons of Game of Thrones. I mean that worked.
It did.
And for those of you that try to tell me there are 7 seasons of Game of Thrones, you're wrong.
That's why that sounded wrong to me. I was maybe there are only 6.
No, there's not. There's 6. and just like Lois Lowry's book that I'm having a hard time remembering right now.
Well, I haven't read it, so you can tell me anything. I'll believe you.
Oh, my gosh. I'm a librarian, this is bad. The Giver. Oh, my gosh. Just like Lois Lowry's The Giver, you need to determine the ending for yourself. It says more about you than it does the story itself.
Is that a choose-your-own-adventure book?
No, but it's a very open-ended at the end. So it's one of those books that we learned in school, at least when I was in school.
Like spinning the Inception top, is it? Where you're just, is it a dream? Is it that
so
kind of
there's this point at the end, and I don't feel like I'm spoiling a 20 some odd year old book. If you haven't read it, that says more about you than me.
Okay, well that's a little combative.
Yeah, you should read it. And a lot of people read it as a kid. I didn't read it as a kid. I read it as an adult. But there's this moment at the end. So they're in this. I'm gonna call it like utopian society, but
love
it's
that.
Very like Uncanny Valley utopian. Mm. Like you know something's wrong, but you can't quite place it.
Sure.
And there's this kid who becomes the new giver. Like there's this role in the village of the giver where they like, I'm gonna mess this up because it's been a few years now. But essentially they become the keeper of like information of the way things are and the way things were before. And as he's becoming this role and studying under the current giver in this role, he realizes they see in black and white, like literally see in black and white. Like there's a moment in the book where he sees red for the first time ever.
Oh my gosh.
And so he starts to realize that by learning and having this knowledge and having this understanding that he starts to see color and see the world as it is and not as this weird, like, utopian. You got to read it. It's even weirder when you read it and you don't realize it's weird until you spend time thinking about it like
so
I have at the end.
That's so cool.
And
okay.
Yeah, so he spends his time. And then at the end, he discovers, like, there's this whole thing where, like, at a certain age, people leave the village. And it's like, oh, they went to do this thing. No, they were literally killing them. You reached your death age, basically. And so he discovers this, and he escapes the village he's in, and with a baby. So I can't remember where the baby comes in, but there's a baby. And he takes a sled. He's like dying. He's running. He's like exhausted in the snow, and he ends up on a sled trying to get to this village he sees at the bottom of the hill or mountain, and it stops. You don't know if he makes it before he dies or not. Ooh. And the whole idea is that if you think he made it or you think he didn't, it says more about you than it does about the story. Like, it's more about how do you think it ended? And I love that kind of thing. Now, she did write a follow-up book to it, so there is an actual canonical ending that I won't say. Because I've met Lois, and she's a wonderful, genuinely warm, loving, wonderful human being. And I did not have the heart to tell her, I wish you'd never written another book in that world. Because I liked the open-endedness of it.
We'll be right back.
This podcast is supported in part by String Joy Strings. I'm a snob, at least that's what people tell me. I'm never okay with good enough, and that's where String Joy Strings come in. They're better than good enough. They're the best. String Joy are making some of the finest strings available today right up the road from me in Nashville, Tennessee. They offer custom sets, balanced tension, coated strings, the works. If you need it, they can probably make it happen. You should be using String Joy Strings, and if you're going to order from them, you really could help this podcast out by clicking the affiliate link down in the description or show notes below. You get amazing strings, I get a little bit of that back to help the show keep going. It's a win-win situation. Get your String Joy Strings today.
Hey, it's really good to meet you. I want to tell you one giant mistake that you made.
I have a major gripe about your entire literary career.
I've got a list of grievances, and we're going to get to all of them.
No, she was fantastic. Anyway, but there's cool. That whole open-endedness. I like that kind of thing. I genuinely don't remember how we got to this point, though.
I also don't remember.
That's fine. This has been great. We started at Star Trek. We've gotten to The Giver. This has been the greatest podcast I've recorded yet already.
Well, I feel real good about it. Don't you know?
Well, my challenge to you is read The Giver, and we'll have a conversation. We'll start a book club, guitar player book club.
I mean, if you're escaping a village with a baby, why not call it The Taker, right? Because I feel let's add that to the list of gripes, I guess. Hey, Lois. You know what grinds my gears?
All right, so now that we have spent the entire first quarter of this podcast,
how long was that? I don't have
that was
15 minutes.
Yeah, we're 15 minutes in at this point, and only 2 minutes of that was self-shill.
It's so, about to get real good.
Yeah, it's getting real good. So, Mike, now that I've got you on, we're going to talk about existentialism. No, I'm kidding. That's not where we're
going
to go.
I love it. I have no idea what's going on, and I'm terrified. And am I real? Is it worth it? These are questions. I don't have answers.
So you do have answers for this, though. You are one of, and this is not blowing smoke. I'm not a kiss ass. You're one of my favorite YouTube personalities.
Oh, and thanks, man.
Well, here's why. I think you have this infectious enthusiasm for like everything. Even when something sucks, you're like infectiously enthusiastic about how much it sucks.
Well, you know, I do love a problem. I do love a challenge and a problem, and I love solving problems, and I love spending my mental effort thinking of how a thing could be rectified. I really enjoy that because that's what I do as a guitar tech, is I see a problem and then I devise a solution if I don't already have one. So those are things that are really important to me and always have been. I wouldn't say I'm enthusiastic about everything, but I also I hold back when I am not enthusiastic about something. Like, there are many things that you will never see on my channel because I don't.
Oh, sure.
I don't see a lot of value in just putting out like an endless, scrolling list of negativity. But like when I get a Fender guitar, like I did with the AV-266 Jazzmaster, right, that had some serious fret and fretboard issues and a whole other cavalcade of errors. When I called that out, you know, my goal is never to like to just shit on a brand. Like, my goal is to point things out in hopes that they can be made better.
Sure.
Because, like, you know, when it comes to Fender, like, I obviously love Fender guitars. I want them to be the best they can be. And so, you know, we can take the example of the American Pro 2 that had that spring problem. If you haven't seen my video on that, I think maybe you have because you're nodding your head. But yeah, the Panorama Vibrato was redesigned to have a much greater range of pitch detuning. So like when you press the bar down, you can go almost a whole octave with 9-gauge strings. But because they redesigned the position of the fulcrum point on that vibrato, they moved it forward toward the spring. The spring all of a sudden is too light duty to handle any string gauge above 10. When it's right. When you put 11s on, which are, you know, what a lot of people use on jazz masters, that's so much string tension that the whole vibrato kind of collapses. And all of a sudden your arm moves just like a little bit, barely detuning the string from E to E flat, like just barely. And so when I discovered that, I made a video on it. And, you know, I haven't gotten a proper update from Fender. Not that I deserve one. But right. I have friends inside Fender who have sent me photos of the springs that they've been testing. And I believe on this current crop of AV2s, I've been getting reports that the vibrato works perfectly now. So it seems that
that's awesome.
Things can happen. But yeah, I don't want to like bring bad things out there without a solution. And I don't want to just, you know, breed negativity in the world. I don't do well with like this. I don't know. I don't have a better word for like the fan mentality or the tribalism that seems to like spring up in guitar circles. We're like, I'm a Gibson guy. I'm a Fender guy. We're enemies.
Right.
Like that kind of thing. I just want things to be better. And I want people to be able and well equipped to handle issues when they arise on their own guitars, because you should not fear your instrument. There's barely anything on it that you can break irreparably. So yeah, I'm really passionate and excited about helping people address issues with their guitars, and that's what keeps me going. So thank you. I'm sorry I talked for so long, but thank you so much for
podcasting.
That means the world to me, because it's hard out there. It's hard out there putting yourself out there constantly on video for everybody to see. It's
one of the reasons I don't do it. I put these podcasts on YouTube, and that's about it right now, because I'm like, man, because I have ideas. I have things I want to do. Also, I need like 4 more hours in every day. But
me too.
on the talking too much. No, I actually, one of the hallmarks of a good episode of the podcast is when I'm editing it and I'm looking at the waveforms in Logic, and I'm looking at it and it's like, oh, it's all guest waveform. That's a good episode.
There's 15 whole minutes of nonsense. I love it.
On that whole tribalism thing, and that's a thing that I'm coming to grips with myself. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things I'm seeing to myself. And in my a past episode, one of the most recent episodes, y'all, I'm blanking right now on which episode exactly I talked about this on. Everybody, I love when I get comments, like people message me after they listen to an episode like, dude, you were so right about XYZ. And I'm like, thank you. I don't remember what I said.
Yeah.
Because I recorded that 3 weeks ago.
Yes. Yeah. People as like a creator type, like people don't seem to get, like, if you don't do this, you may not understand that when you finish a project and you export it, and then your mind just erases it.
You're gone. Like you moved have on.
The next thing to worry about. So like, when I get messages about a video from 4 years ago, like someone wrote me recently and was like, do you remember the pickup heights on some guitar that I worked on for somebody else? And I'm like, no, I'm sorry. No. Or like someone will comment on an Instagram post that is literally a decade old and they'll go, what string gauge was on this? And I'll be like, I don't retain that information. I don't know what I did 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I was in the shower before this because I don't like to record anything when I haven't showered, because I don't know. There's some like psychological thing that happens where I'm like, I'm clean. I'm pristine. I'm ready to go.
Dude, that's a whole thing. No, that's a whole different podcast to talk about. The whole like that mental preparedness of like, I need to be in the right mental space to do this thing. Like right now there are dirty dishes in my sink and that bothers me.
Oh no, I feel it. I feel it too.
Yeah,
I feel it too.
But So on that vein, though, I don't remember which episode I talked about this, but I've been going through this year, like this whole self journey like thing, right? Mm. Where and I'm on this whole thing where I'm trying to stop fixating on things I don't like, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. I actually think we as a society do it too much. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's that whole thing. You don't want to talk too much about things you don't like. It makes for, unfortunately, it makes for viral podcasting, YouTube making, Instagram videos, TikTok. Everybody loves to commiserate with you and hate on the thing you hate.
Yeah.
And I'm so tired of hating things.
Yep.
I'm tired of that entire mentality. I want to like things. I'm tired of talking about mm-hmm. That doesn't mean I don't call out bullshit when I see it. Mm-hmm. But that also means that I'm want to spend more time talking about things I love. And the one for me this year has been, I have been a PRS 8 hater. And I realized this is probably 3 episodes in a row I've talked about this, but I've been a PRS hater until the point that it became an identity. Like,
wow.
As the guy who hates PRS, that like I wasn't even willing to give him a shot anymore, because I was like, oh, that would wreck like everything I've said. And like, so I gave him another shot and I'm like, oh, they're not as bad as I give them credit for. I kind of like a couple of models, but that's the whole thing, is that you want to be more positive, and I want to be more positive.
I absolutely do.
Does that mean your YouTube channel won't grow as fast or as much? Absolutely. Probably, that's what that means.
I mean, that's what, look, like I refuse to make, well, first of all, I refuse to have a stated opinion on every single thing that goes on in the world. I don't think that much of myself, but I also don't think that like I need to waste my time. Like every new guitar announcement, I got to have a hot take ready. Like I don't operate like that in real life. Why would I do that on the internet? But then, oh, Philip, but then what was I saying? But then, no, I also don't want to feed the thing that, now that we've given ourselves over to algorithms and they're curating our feeds, algorithms will always pick the thing that generates the most traffic, the most interaction, engagement, whatever they call it. And because the algorithm is so keyed into negativity, I refuse to even engage with it. Like, I know that that's going to stifle my growth. I know that that means that less people will see me. Fine. Like, I don't care. Like, there are so many other ways for me to leave a mark on this world. Why would I want it to be that? You know, and it's hard too, because I have to make like a serious personal choice every day when I sit down and I watch YouTube at the end of the day and like get caught up on what's going on in the world. Like it's to the point where I just straight up will not click on a video that uses the phrase "you're doing it wrong," because and some of those videos, like best of intentions, like I get it. I'm not shitting on anybody, but I am saying that when I see that phrase, like, my thought is that's for engagement. I don't want to feed that. When you could just as easily make a thumbnail that says, here's how to do it the right way, or here's how to play this song that you've been playing wrong. Like, here are the real chords. Like, we could talk about Weezer. I'm a huge Weezer fan. I love those first two records deeply. But like, I always see people play "The World Has Turned" using just a regular G, D, B, C progression, where the Weezer sound is adding that low fifth in. You're playing a D power chord with the A on top, just bar the A, or you're doing the E position shape on the E, A, and D strings, and you're getting the third in there. Like, you're getting this massive, huge sounding chord. And so, when someone plays a regular D chord, it doesn't sound correct. It's not like the way the record has it. But I'm not going to make a video that's like, you're doing it wrong, you should be ashamed of yourself, here's the right way, loser. Like, that, why not just make a playthrough video? Why not just say, like, here are the chords? Like, why do we have to get contentious about everything? I'm off my soapbox. I just don't see the value in it.
No, it's a soapbox worth being on. And it's funny because, you know, my listeners know I work in public libraries, and I actually do training because my background before I got into restaurants was bar and restaurant management, which also meant I was a musician who needed a day job or a night job, as it were. That's how most like musicians get into bar and restaurant management, is they work in the bars they play in.
Yeah.
It's like a whole thing. So that's what happened to me. But I have this, so I've been deep in like customer service industry for most of my life. You know, my first job when I was old enough to hold a broom was sweeping my uncle's stores,
nice.
Kind of thing.
What
you know,
kind of store?
In retail, liquor store.
Nice.
I wasn't gonna say that, but since you asked, he actually owned a liquor store and a grocery store across the street from each other.
Oh, cool.
Playing well into that Lebanese stereotype. But so sweeping those floors, but I have been like in retail or in bar and restaurant most of my life until I got into libraries. And so I do training on customer service. And one of the things I talk about in my customer service training is signs that you put up around. And every business has signs, right? Every business has to put up a sign up for something, and libraries do it a lot. And one of the things I tell my staff and what I tell other people they ought to do is stop using the words no, don't, not, can't in your signs. First of all, nobody's reading your signs. Second of all, you're also creating a negative environment, because there is another way to say that. Like, for example, we had a sign. A newer staff member didn't know my policy, my stance on this. We had these stack of chairs that had to be stay in like storage, and we needed people to stop dragging them out throughout the building, right?
Sure.
And they had a sign, big cross out red, like the no smoking style signs, like big cross out, don't move these chairs. I was like, you can rephrase that. And they're like, how? I was like, you could say, for safety of all patrons, we would rather you not move these chairs, or help us keep the library neat by leaving these chairs here and using the chairs in such other section. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like there are other ways to say it where you don't have to be that, I don't know, that negative, like building on that negativity. You don't have to create a negative space. And that's the thing that I'm trying to build in this podcast. Like, I don't want to be a negative space podcast, even though occasionally I've got to be a little negative because you got to call people on some things.
I can't wait till the part of the podcast where you do that to me. Are you going to call me out for something?
I'm totally going to call you out, Mike.
This is going to get good.
No, I'm not going to call you out. But it is one of those things, like, for example, talking about, you know, because I'm not here to bash Fender. I own Fenders. I love Fenders. But there was a point with like the American Vintage Reissue 2. I'm sorry, I'm getting all those words in order.
Well, that, too many words and model names. It's such a damn long American Vintage 2, 1966 Jazzmaster. American Vintage 2, 1961 Stratocaster.
Yeah. Like, so many words. It's like my coffee order at this point. Too many words. But it's funny because I'm pretty sure if I'm correct, that Jazzmaster was actually Jason from Working Class Music.
Yeah, and he got it. Oh, I don't know if I'm allowed to say where he got it from, but he got it like fresh from a music retailer that has a multi-point inspection process.
Yes, there we go. That's going to... That could be many, many, many.
Who could that
many.
Be? Certainly not one of our sponsors. Let me tell
Surely
you about.
not my sponsor. I mean, I'd like for them to be. If they want to be, I'm here. You know who you are. I actually know for a fact someone there listens. So, hey, hit me up. I can be bought. That's all I'm saying.
And I have no beef with you. I'm so sorry. Please forgive me. I regret everything I've said.
But so I was talking, I was actually, while you had that guitar, and like y'all were like having a conversation with Jason about that guitar, I was at their house in Atlanta.
I want to go to the WCM pad.
Dude, I tell you what, you fly to Mississippi and we'll drive over and we will invade their space.
I
for
haven't
a
been on a road trip in a long time.
Dude, come on, anytime. Actually, I've been jokingly, I don't know, 70% jokingly saying I want to organize like a podcaster, YouTuber, like thing in Nashville where everybody can come together and hang out and do the thing. And something that's not around Gear Fest or NAMM or something where we make the agenda, like we make the plan.
I like that.
All right. So I'll put you on the email list that right now is me.
But you were saying you and Jason were talking about this.
So yeah, we were talking about that guitar, and I was like, because it was funny because, like, you know, he played it and was like, okay with it.
Yeah.
But then, you know, you got a hold of it and you're like, here are some problems. Yeah. And that wasn't the only guitar that came out at that time that had some problems out of that.
Whew, I was so surprised by some of the other ones that I was seeing on YouTube.
the one Xander got, the ultra, is the ultra deluxe.
Oh, Jaguar. The Jaguar. That's not, that's 25 and a half inch. That, again, yeah, I don't mean to be negative, but it does not compute.
it's a Jaguar in almost name only.
Yeah.
It's a Jaguar in sort of concept, but yeah, it's, there was a point there where things got a little shoddy.
The wiring was, is that correct? Is that what I'm remembering? The wiring,
I think,
is completely
the wiring
up?
Is wrong. Like, he had an issue with his bridge pickup that was basically non-existent.
That's right.
He went to change strings and the ferrules literally fell out the back of the guitar.
Oh.
Like, they were only held in by the string tension.
Oh, I don't remember that. Oof.
Yeah, like, there were a whole bunch of things.
And they went through three of them. Am I correct on
yes.
that?
Yes. At least two. And they, I don't and remember if it was
right.
an extra one.
It was two, and the third one was the good one, right? Where the other two had almost identical issues?
Man, I think I'm, so. I think that was it's it. Been I so know it long. Had identical bridge issues, the bridge yeah. pickup issues. Yeah. So it's like, those are the kinds of things where I'm like, you're not being negative. You're trying to be constructive.
I'm doing
it's
my
what
best.
It's what I call constructive negativity versus destructive negativity.
Yeah.
And it's where you legitimately want things to be better. It's like when, because I've said it on so many podcasts, and I guess everyone who continues to listen understands and is okay with it. I do love Gibson guitars, but I'm also mm-hmm. very critical of bad decision making and yeah. issues with production and things like that. Like, I still mm-hmm. have major issues with some of their signature artist decisions they're making.
They did my boy Mark Agnesi so dirty. I'll never forgive him for it. Never forgive him. Like, I know it's going to limit my Gibson based opportunities in the future, but like, you have a diamond in your hand and you're crushing it back into coal. No, Mark by all accounts seems fine now, but like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that we're coming after you thing, and you can see the look in his eye where it is just a hostage situation, and I love Mark. Mark, if you're hearing this, email me back. Did you get my email? You might not have seen
it. So this weekend, I did on Sunday, I did a live stream with Steve from 60 Cycle Hum.
Oh, I love Steve.
Me too. Over on the 60 Cycle Hum channel. And somehow we ended up on this subject because I always end up on Gibson, it feels like, which is bad. I don't want to become like that guy. Mm-hmm. Like, there's already a Trogly. You don't need me to become that guy. So
I want to know what you mean by that. I need you to unpack statement.
Trogly is like, Trogly's a Gibson pusher. Like, he is. And like, I'm
oh,
not
is he a pusher, like a pusher pusher. Okay.
Yeah. Like, he's all about some Gibson. Like, I realize Trogly is both a YouTuber and a retailer. Like, he has mm-hmm. his own space where he retails. That's a whole thing.
For sure.
But like, I feel like he's a little, you know, I don't know. He's a little everything Sunny for me when it comes to Gibson.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I like Gibson, but I'm not an everything Sunny kind of guy. Mm-hmm. But you don't need that. I like a bunch of other brands too. I like a bunch. I like guitars, y'all. I just like good guitars.
Guitars are pretty cool. I think we can agree on that. Yeah. Let's shake. Let's shake on it.
Let's.
Other arm.
Something like that.
Oh, wait. Are you on the opposite side of me?
Yeah. I'm mirrored, I think. Okay. Okay. This is going to be awkward. I have no idea how I'm going to edit this to make that work. Actually, I'm not going to edit that to make it work. I'm just going to let it happen.
Yeah, let it fall flat. It's okay.
Listeners, you just dodged a bullet. That's all.
Listeners, I tried to do an internet handshake with my friend Philip, and unsurprisingly, didn't work at all. So,
like many things on the internet.
But you and I, we both love guitars, but we love Gibson. I love Gibson. I used to
be
Gibson,
I love Gibson
only.
Want them to be good. I want them to be good, but I need them to get their house in order. Mm. And I hope they're doing it. I think there's been positive growth in the last few years since the end of the Henry J era, but
sure.
Neither here nor there.
At the risk of causing you to rehash something that your listeners are probably sick of hearing, can you just give me a real quick bullet point list of like what house ordering things?
Sure. There are. So I think there's so Hillary from the Midriff podcast.
Oh, Hillary rules. Oh my God.
I love Hillary.
Oh, what a cool person.
One of the best times I've had talking to someone was talking to Hillary. So
I get such an inordinate, I'm going to take that again. It gets such an inordinate amount of joy from every time I scroll Instagram and I see someone with a guitar and they go, ooh, they do that like arm move. And
yeah.
I'm like, that's Hillary. I'm in. And I watch every video. Hillary is just the best. I can't get enough of her.
Killer guitarist.
I want to be in a band with her so bad.
Me too. Head and heart's in the right place. All those kinds of things. Got killer taste in gear. Which I judge people on. as I'm saying, I'm not negative. No, I'm totally negative, and I'm trying to be a better person, y'all. Y'all heard me. So, but like, they need to get like. They've got to get better, and Hillary and I did talk about it. They've got to get better about the artists they approach for signature
guitars.
They've got to get better about some representation in their ads. They've got to get, and the thing that bothers me the most is that they are doing some things that aren't being advertised.
Yeah.
And not everybody sees them. I see them because I'm on some email lists where I hear about some things. Mm-hmm. But I also am that person who's like, well, they're doing these things, but they're not advertising it. But also, would you feel it was genuine if all they were doing were advertising all the great things they're doing?
Yeah. I mean, there's got to be a balance because there's another company that we both enjoy that touts every little achievement they do.
That's true.
And
I'm genuinely trying to narrow it down.
I think it's okay. I think it's okay. Yeah. And I think honestly necessary because as much as I have enjoyed the work of Slash and Adam Jones and Kirk Hammett over the years, can I please see some fresh blood in that lineup? Can I please see, I haven't been as excited about Gibson's artists since the days of when the Donnas were being supported by Gibson. Man. I see Allison Robertson.
Yes.
I that was amazing. And I was like, yes, she's so good. An incredible guitar player, made some bangers with that band. And I was like, yes, okay, I'm on board. I can get with that.
Side note, I've never seen the Donnas live, but I
always
did,
wanted to.
We did some shows with a band I was in. We did some LA shows for 2004, forever ago, mm-hmm. a million years ago. And while I was there in town, Rooney was playing in LA at a venue I can't remember the name of right now. But at the time, Rooney's guitarist was dating the guitarist from the Donnas. And so she came out and did a couple of songs with them. And it was such a rad show.
You said the word Rooney and you unlocked like a giant squirreled away memory in my brain of that era. Oh my God. When you go back and edit this video, you're going to have to do like a Ken Burns zoom in on my face when I froze for a minute and rebooted.
You give me way too much credit for my amount of editing, but yes.
that stuff though, like it would be so easy. It would be so easy to get some interesting new Gibson guitars out there.
Right.
Cause you've got companies like Electrical Guitar Company that are using like the Les Paul mm-hmm. double cut shape to make clear aluminum necked guitars. Like, why isn't Gibson trying?
Let me break your brain. Cause we've had this conversation inside the Patreon, inside the podcast Discord. Y'all, there is a podcast Discord that you do not have to be a Patreon supporter to join.
I'd like to join.
You can join, there you go. Look at that. You can come talk to Mike over in the Discord. It is, if you go to 40wattpodcast.com or you go to Linktree, it's linktr.ee/40wattpodcast. You can find the link to the Discord. You can join, you can hang out, you can chat with us. Please come join us. But
I'm talking to your friends right now.
Look at that. This is pro advertising right here. So we were talking over in, actually, that's my ADD kicking in now, ADHD.
I have that too.
Yeah. Oh man, that's why this is a great episode. And we are driving all of the people who don't have ADHD.
It feels great to me, but I hope it's not super scatterbrained on the other end. But we're getting there. We're pivoting. We're Tokyo drifting all over this podcast.
Look, if people haven't had to hit that 15 seconds back button multiple times to figure out how we got where we are, then it's a failure as an episode.
What did they just say?
Yeah, it's like, wait, Star Trek, Gibson, Fender, Discord, what?
The Donnas, okay. Rooney.
The Donnas. Yeah, man. But so we're going to back up. I'm going to try to back up because we can't live back up and figure out where we were. But
I brought up EGC and clear aluminum neck guitars. Yeah. You said I'm gonna blow your mind.
We were talking about it over in Discord. Gibson doesn't make a double cut that's not custom shop right now.
I know, it sucks.
They don't make a double cutaway Les Paul that isn't custom shop. The most recent one was the Rick Beato limited number double cut.
That's right. Yep.
What the hell? They don't even make the tribute anymore.
Yeah.
I had a tribute double cut for a little while, and it was a really great guitar. The Les Paul Special tribute double cut. Again, too many words in your model names. But why? Why does that not exist? Why do I have to go to a $4,000 guitar to get what should be a budget model?
Yeah, like especially when they were a budget model in the 2000s. Like there was that faded version that was like, what, $800, $900?
Yeah, man.
Like, I mean, I know that costs have risen. I get that. But like why cut stuff like that? Those feel like big sellers. I mean, I saw everyone using those on tours back in the 2000s. Yeah. Everybody had one. I've worked on so many of those. And like, it's not like the DC Special or Junior are like complicated machines, like a stop tail at an angle and a P90 and a couple cutaways. And like, there you are. Like, it's not a crazy expensive guitar to make. It's not complicated. Like, why not? Why don't we have those?
I also get that post robo tuners, they had to like trim the lineup down a little so they could devote a little more energy to the things that really were selling. And to the credit of I've learned this. I didn't know this. I had to be told this, like this whole Slash thing. And I've literally mentioned this in the last 3 weeks on a podcast. Listeners, I apologize. Mike's not heard it yet. The Slash thing. Apparently, while we're tired of Slash guitars, they sell like freaking hotcakes South and Central America.
Yeah, which is great. So, like,
that's great.
I'm all about that. But it doesn't mean we can't also.
Yes. Also,
if we have to have 35 different colors of a flame top Les Paul, fine. I'm fine. Like, I'm not complaining about that, but I would really like to see like a couple colors of a different thing.
Knowing that only two Les Paul colors need to exist, being Sunburst and Gold Top.
Gonna have to disagree with you there. Oh. I like white on a custom and black on a standard.
I don't like a black standard. I like a black custom.
Oh, my first good guitar was a black standard and God, I miss that guitar. I wish it weren't 10 and a half pounds. I wish it didn't have a super wide neck. But, what a great first really good guitar. Like, that thing ripped. Yeah.
The first Les Paul I ever played was an 80s black standard. And 80s, while that does hold a little special place in my heart, it's not my preferred. Look, Mike, I am a boomer trapped in a millennial's body.
Okay.
I like traditional colors. I like traditional things. I understand that, but I'm also that person who like tries not to yuck people's yum. It's like if you don't dig those things, that's okay.
Yeah.
So if you do like another color of Les Paul, that's fine. I only want two colors.
I've always wanted a white custom from the 70s or 80s. Like there was a white 86. I want to say custom. At a record shop in my hometown of York, Pennsylvania, a place called Ico's, which is still there today. And it rips. Oh, wow. It's great. They used to sell used guitars. And for $800, I think it was like 1999, I was in high school. I went in and I could smell the guitar before I saw it. It was so smoked out, nicotined. It was white, but it was orange. It was straight up orange, and it had been smoked around so much that the gold plating on the hardware was bubbled. Like that, it wasn't just sweat; it was just bubbling off. Disgusting guitar, but it was incredible. And it was at the time I was like, "Yeah, heavy guitars are great. I'm strong and young." but like, oh man, I should have bought that for $800. I should have.
Oh my gosh! Yes.
Yeah.
You are unlocking. So I've been lucky in the town I'm living in now. I moved here literally 5 weeks before the pandemic. So like I didn't get to meet anyone. Right.
Oh,
it, I'd been coming to the town I'm in, like Starkville. I'm in Starkville, Mississippi. I'd been coming here for years because I love college sports and, you know, there's Mississippi State universities here. So I came to games, but I didn't really know people here. So I moved here. So I've started to meet some of the musicians finally in town. And one of them, a couple of, pardon y'all. I hope those burps did not come out on the
microphone. I didn't hear them.
Good. We're good. We'll see what happens when I put compression on this later. but one of the guys that I've met is sort of like one of the old cats. Like he's been around a while and he's played in a lot of like bar bands, but he's also played with a lot of cats that do a lot of the blues stuff that I love and some of the country blues stuff and the hill country blues stuff that I love. And he's played with a bunch of folks. And I got to meet him. So our music store does this thing. Every spring, they do what's called a spring cleaning day.
Okay.
So it's a day where they'll literally clean out the back and like what's been sitting here forever. Ooh. And like most of it is junk, as you would expect. But like I bought a 12 string from them a couple of years ago, a Yamaha 12 string that needed work. For $20.
Yes. Oh, what a cool deal.
Yeah, that kind of thing. But what the other thing they do is they have coffee and donuts and they tell you, do you have something you want to sell? Come set up a table in front of the store
and sell your stuff.
No fee. They don't take a cut. They're like, just set up. If you have something you want, do some trading. What it becomes like this little like, you know, neighborhood guitar flea market. It's so cool.
God, that's rad.
Although it's declined in interest in the last few years. They're going to try to do something a little different next year. But so I met this guy at that and he said, yeah, he wasn't selling it, but it, like we got to talking about his guitar. And so he actually had it in the car and he grabbed it. You got to check this out. And it was a white custom that, you know, I'm going to hold up a few visual aids here, listeners. I apologize, but this is for Mike's benefit. You'll just have to imagine. You know, it was supposed to be a white custom. This is my mouse. This is my Apple trackpad.
Yeah, I've got one of those.
It's supposed to be that color. It was this color.
Oh, it was manila.
Oh, yeah. It was, and it like snicketined out. Like, it was the coolest guitar.
Oh, my God.
You could smell it when he opened the case. So, as you were describing that, I was like, I just lived this.
What
like,
if that
a few
was
weeks
that the
ago.
Same guitar that we both encountered? The same guitar?
I don't think that's possible, but that is okay. It's not impossible.
It's not
impossible.
Nothing is impossible.
Exactly. It's unlikely. But not impossible. But yeah, man. It was that whole experience all over again. It was this white custom that, you know, beat up, like honest relic, nicotined out. I was like, oh, that is so cool. I can't stand how cool it is. So man. It shouldn't be cool. The smoking's bad. Y'all don't do it. But damn, it was cool.
It's so cool. Oh, I wish. Oh, I wish. I'd still like one, even though I can't play guitars that are hardtails or 1/11/16ths or heavy guitars like... Even though I have this like ever-growing list of things that turn me off, like I would like a 3-pickup white custom with a Bigsby. That'd be 100%.
Man,
classy as all get out.
Right. It is, and you know, it's one of those things where I don't like gold hardware, but if you have a custom, it better have a gold. Better
it
have
has
gold
to.
Hardware. Yeah, it better. It just has to.
I'm with you, 100%.
Yeah. So, but what you can play, so we're finally getting to the offset part of this conversation.
We're 51 minutes in and we're
51 minutes in. We're going to get to the offset because, so this is a thing that I am offset curious. I've had a Jazzmaster in the past. Mm-hmm. I had one of the classic players.
With the P90s and the modern trem spacing, the Adjust-O-Matic bridge. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Basically all wrong. You know, the literally the trim's in the wrong spot on the body. Now mine, I got it from a pawn shop.
Nice.
I got it at a ridiculously low price. Yes, it can still happen.
Love that.
And I did have to replace the pickups because the bridge pickup was DOA.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah. It's fine. They weren't the right pickups anyway. So I put a set of the 65 Pure Vintage Jazzmaster pickups in there, which were fine. Mm-hmm. I wasn't like blown away by them.
Yeah. They're not my favorite set for sure.
No, they were okay. But they worked. So they were already an improvement on the previous pickups.
The bar was all the way down here.
Yes, absolutely. So I did end up like I went through a gear purge a couple of years ago. I sold a bunch of stuff off to buy things, of course, because that's what we do. Mm-hmm. And I sold that off because I had gotten a Novo. And I've got a Saris J with P90s, my favorite pickup of all time.
I love Novo. Love that company.
I've got two of them now. I've managed to track down a Saris S, their Strat pickup that they discontinued. They don't make that model anymore.
Ooh, yeah, Lord.
It is special. It's something special. So it's the one thing, like, I love Dennis Fano and I love his guitars, but I think they messed up by discontinuing that model. Because their newer version, the Idris, is
named after Idris Elba?
I hope so. But actually, I also hope not, because Idris Elba is a beautiful man and that guitar is not as beautiful as it should be.
I love me a good Luther. Love me a good
Luther. But I don't know. The new version is just the old version still just felt like something different, even though it had the Strat pickup complement and the bridge and, you know, those kinds of things. It still felt like its own guitar. Hmm. And supposedly the reason they swapped is because they wanted something that felt more like a different guitar and Novo doing. And I feel like they went closer to the Strat direction.
Oh, interesting.
Like, yeah. I was like, I think you did this backwards, but that's just me. They're probably.
One.
Yeah, I haven't played one. I'm sure they play incredibly. That's never my qualm about any Novo, period. I think they make the best necks in the business.
Yeah.
But I sold the classic player because I had the Saris J. I got really, really into the mastery vibrato that's on that thing. And just,
yeah.
But it's P90s. It's a different vibe. I still want to do the Jazzmaster thing.
Sure.
So I'm Jazzmaster curious. I've got some things that are sitting in another room right now that are sort of, I could sell this and buy a Jazzmaster of some kind.
All right.
What do you think is the best available, currently made option?
Oh boy.
Short of, obviously, we're not looking at custom shop. Look at this. Okay. I'm going to put you on the spot, man.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I have many friends in the custom shop. Like Levi is amazing,
and they make great
Andy
stuff.
Hicks
but
is
I'm not
killing it.
I'm not ready to put custom shop money on something that is a way down the totem pole. Sorry, that's a phrase I should not use. Way down the priority list, guitar for me.
You do not have to go custom shop to get a fine guitar. Yeah, you know, I will freely agree that best is subjective entirely, you know, dependent on the player, the needs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
But for me, the models that I end up recommending the most are actually very similar. I recommend the do you know the Dave's Guitar Shop? Do you know Dave's Guitar Shop? You ever heard of that place?
I don't.
This is one of a few retailers that still can do like limited runs to their own spec.
And really?
Dave's, this is letting the cat out of the bag, so enjoy this. Dave's does limited runs of 62 Jazzmasters. They still do AVRI 62 type Jazzmasters with a 9.5 inch fretboard radius instead of a 7.25. So a lot more, you know, a lot more players who like a modern feel or to bend a lot more will enjoy those necks. They are 1 5/8 inch nut widths. So they've got the vintage correct nut width, but they usually do them in custom colors, generally surf green, sonic blue, and fiesta red. They have a matching headstock. And they come with, you know, all the stuff that you would find on an AVR 62. They've got the vibrato, the bridge, the knobs, etc., and the case, all of that stuff. And they start at about $17.99, I think, is where they started new, which is way lower than vintage two, professional two, etc., etc. They do sell out almost immediately because the few people who are like paying attention. Know what they are and go for them. My buddy Jake has one, and it is legitimately one of the best recent Fenders I have played. And so, yeah, I highly recommend that. But related to Dave's recent 62 reissues, the Thinskin series from 2007 to 2009. If you can find one of those for a good price, they came in a huge a range of custom colors, including Sonic Blue and Fiesta Red, yes, but also Shoreline Gold, Aztec Ooh. Gold, Inca Silver. You could get them in Burgundy Mist. You could get them in Candy Apple Red. You could get them in so many colors. There was even like a 59 version of the Thin Skin that came in blonde with a 7.25 radius fretboard. All of the others have 9.5. They all have matching headstock except for the 59 style. That's what I have, my guitar R2, my blue one. I'm sure you've seen that.
Yes.
That is a Thin Skin, and they are wonderful guitars. And, they do have a little bit bigger neck. The neck is a little bit bigger and it's wider. It's 1/11/16. I kind of struggle with that a little bit, but, otherwise they are excellent guitars. Those are the two that I recommend the most. However, the Thin Skins from 2007 to 2009 are, people ask incredible money for them. Like, I would even go far as to say incredulous money for them. So like, yeah, people are asking like $3,500 for them. And at that point it's like, why not just go for custom shop? But I see that your browser is open. Let's go to Reverb and look for Thin Skin Jazz Masters and see what we find right now.
So I was looking, because you mentioned the Dave's, so I needed to check it out. They do have currently in their shop a 62 Fiesta Red Jazz Master with matching headstock, which matching headstock, those are important words to me.
That's the one that my buddy Jake has, and it's incredible. Oh. It's genuinely incredible. I love it.
God, that is beautiful.
On Reverb right now, there's a couple 59 Thin Skins. I'm not sure what year they are. That one's a 2019. So it's a Thin Skin 59 style Jazz Master for 1979. Great song, by the way. there's one for 2250 that's a 2020 version, which I didn't know about. I didn't know there. Maybe that's another Dave's run. Oh, it's from Wildwood. They also do limited runs, and that's killer. That's got the gold guard.
And listeners, I need to say, I know that $2,200, $2,000, $1,900 is a lot of money for a guitar.
It surely is.
It surely is. But also, we are at a point where, you know, we can keep hoping that prices go down, but they usually don't.
Every damn day of my life.
Yeah, they usually don't. And we're at a point now where I think if you want to get a certain, I'm not telling you that affordable or budget conscious guitars aren't good, but if you want to get a certain thing, there's a price point where it lives now.
If you have refined tastes, if you have the taste, if you're like me, it's not even about refined. The tastes are, if you have like preferences and you know from experience what works for you and what doesn't, like I would say my third most recommended Jazz Master model is the Squire Classic Vibe, because I think they're great. They're easy to mod. If you set them up right, like they're pretty damn dependable out of the box. So I recommend those third best. For most people, especially if you're only Jazz Master curious, if you're experimenting, you're branching out a little bit, you want to, you're in college, you want to see how things work, go for it. Go for a Classic Vibe. Like they're genuinely good. Very good.
I have a Classic Vibe, jazz bass that I think is an incredible instrument.
Those are great
for the money I put into it. And I bought it during their sale. We don't need to go into details of why things were on sale in December. Because I think I know, even though no one's ever said. I think I may have mentioned it on the podcast. But I got it at literally a late 60s Classic Vibe jazz bass shipped to my door.
To your door.
For $250.
Oh, my God.
What an incredible instrument for $250. God. I wish when I started learning guitars, there were guitars at that price point, at that quality.
When I was learning, I wish there were guitars at that quality, at that price point, because like I had to deal with like Squire Affinity back in the day.
Yeah.
And like Affinity, I feel like is a different beast now than it was in the 90s.
Oh, big time.
They were horrible plywood pieces of crap. Like
I say recently, in the last 5 years, I had someone who was clearing out a closet and found a couple of guitars. You know how this goes. Mm-hmm. And one of them was one of the, and And I need Fender does this and Gibson does this too. They reuse words in models.
Oh, I hate
and
then that. You,
I hate it. They had a Squire Starcaster, and not the cool semi hollow one.
The bane of my existence as a fan of the 70s hollow body Fender.
Yeah.
Ugh.
You can't search for it because you're going to find these like 90s terrible wannabe Strats that were awful. So they had one of those and a Squire Affinity or a Squire Bullet that they just gave me. They were like, I don't know what to do with these. You play guitar. Here, have these. And they were the biggest pieces of junk that I've dealt with in a long time. And that was what people found on the affordable end of things.
Yeah, but now, affordable now is good. Ridiculous. Like, really good. I think they've come a long way. And I mean, yeah, when you're just starting out, like, whatever, a $100 guitar is fine to just get, you know, get your fingers working. That's fine. But like, once you get to a point where feel starts to matter to you, and also like the fret ends are cutting you up, it's not a fun experience, then like, yeah, current day Squires are excellent. Like, genuinely.
And
incredible.
I feel like I would be a terrible podcast host around guitar if I didn't mention, and y'all, I'm going to give a date. I'm going to tell y'all. It, right now, we are recording on May 24th of 2023.
Uh-huh.
So if you go looking for this after this point, well, good luck to you. But right now on Pro Audio Star, they have the 40th edition Squires marked down 47%.
Whoa, what?
Yeah, you can buy a 40th anniversary Jazzmaster Squire for $319.
Is that the vintage or the gold edition?
They have, let me see, they've got the Lake Placid Blue Jazzmaster.
Oh, that one.
They've also got the Satin Desert with the gold pickguard and the maple fretboard, which is what Chris Buck has been playing around.
I gave that one a really favorable review, too. I really liked the one.
I played. I played one in a local shop, relatively local, in Jackson, Mississippi, and I thought very highly of it. They also have a satin seafoam at $319.
Yeah, I love that color. Do enjoy that color.
So that is an option. That's a thing I've looked at, and I'm like, I don't know. That might be the way to go. Or if you need a jazz, bass, they've got a 40th anniversary Squire jazz bass in Sunburst for $299.
Damn.
Yeah, dude. It's like,
wow.
There were no quality $300 guitars when I started learning guitar.
Yeah, at least not the quality that we have now. Like, things, the processes are so much better than they have been in the past. I feel like a lot more time is being put into them. Yeah, it's been a while since I picked up a Squire and went, oh, this isn't great.
Yeah. That's exactly it. That's exactly what happened to me when I finally started picking some up in not in that shop that I was just talking about. It's actually DC Guitar Studio in Madison, Mississippi. If anybody wants to go check them out in the Jackson area,
check them out.
Yeah, check them out. I was checking out guitars there and played a bunch of Squires. I was like, these are way better than the Squires of my youth.
The Squires of yore.
So, Mike, we have gone on for quite a while here. We're approaching we've passed the end of the regular episode, but
we've gone on a little long. I didn't realize
that. Yes, no, it's okay. We don't really have a hard time here.
Neither do I.
This is long form content. It's fine. But we are going to wrap up here, and we're going to move over to the Patreon episode. Again, y'all know how to find us on Patreon. There are links below down in the description. Speaking of the description below, there are going to be links to where you can find Mike. And so, Mike, they can find you on...
Oh, sorry, you're setting me up. That's set you up. YouTube, Instagram, the same name. It's the sound of a cartoon sword being unsheathed. It's a stupid name, but it's what I'm stuck with at this point. it's Pusheen. You know, think of it that way. It should be easier to remember. Pusheen is how that's spelled. But you can find me on YouTube and Instagram. You can find my various writings all over the internet on Fretboard Journal and Premier Guitar and Guitar.com. Most recently, 11 Magazine, where I had the absolute honor and pleasure of meeting, playing, and inspecting Kurt Cobain's Smells Like Teen Spirit Mustang.
Oh, that's so rad.
Yeah, very proud of that. Glad that happened. Can't believe it happened.
So on that, with the writing for Fretboard Journal, are you going to be at Fretboard Summit?
Yeah, I'm planning on it.
I'm also going to be there, dude. We got to get together.
Jason, hang out. Well, absolutely. Let's hang out. Jason really wants me to like give a talk, but I still can't figure out what the heck I would want to even talk about for an hour. So yeah, let's hang.
Yeah, let's hang. We'll do something. So all those links are going to be below. You can check them out. Just click them. It's real easy. You don't have to be able to spell anything. The link is below, either in the description on YouTube or down in the show notes on whatever platform you're listening to this podcast. So having said all that, I have decided, since I have stolen, and I've mentioned this in the last few episodes, and I promise listeners I'll quit mentioning because you're going to get tired of hearing it. Since I've stolen most of Blake Weiland's format, from the Tone Mob. I really have. I'm unashamed about this. But like, where I think we deviate is Blake's really deep into like heavier music, yeah, and I'm really not. So that's where I think we deviate a little bit. But he has his classic questions at the end.
Okay.
And I don't care what your favorite boss pedal is. Great. So. Because it should be the Ottawa. That's all I'm saying.
I don't know if I have an answer for that, honestly.
Good. But my question is a little different. I've been closing out with this episode, with this conversation, because before we started talking, we actually had an intent to talk about the concept of having too much gear.
Absolutely.
And we're going to talk about that over on the Patreon episode. We're going to start there. Assuming that my ADHD doesn't drop that when we go somewhere else before we start recording it.
It's bound to happen.
Yeah. But being someone who, you know, borders on too much gear or maybe crossed that line a long time ago, I also know that you're probably always looking at things. There's always something on the back burner. You're like, oh, if I see that,
yeah.
What's on your horizon? What are you looking for?
What am I looking for currently? Well, I'm always looking still for a proper 60s Trini Lopez with the 1/9/16 nut.
Oh,
That's my favorite. It's a guitar I've wanted for a long time. Right now, you know, I could always use a more pedals, but I'm also selling a bunch.
I went through that recently, whereas like I trimmed my pedal collection down to where like I really like these, but I also don't have them for any other reason than I like them, but I'm not going to use them.
Yeah, I've got a few of those on my shelf that I need to get rid of. Here's something. What I'm actively looking for right now is a neck for a Jaguar that I'm building out of a body that my friend Jake gave me. I need a Jaguar, Music Master, Mustang, Duo Sonic, or Bronco neck. That's what I'm looking for. And I know I could very easily just order one, but like...
Sure.
I don't know. I like restoring old things. So I'm looking for a project that needs frets or something like that. That's what's on my horizon right now. That's the thing that I'm looking for. Otherwise, I'll show it to you.
Okay. Yeah.
Otherwise, I've got, sorry, I hit the mic, but I've got this Jag ready to go. It just doesn't have a neck.
Oh, rad.
But this is what I've built out of the body my friend donated to me. So this is an Inca Silver MJT body. It was just the body, and you know, I had an extra guard. I had these Novak lipsticks in a drawer for like 6 years, so I'm very excited to do that. Brodsky plate, mastery setup. I just need a neck.
Yeah, no, I like it.
Yeah,
and you know, there's that thing about you could order it, but see if you're like me. All right. Do you like the hunt as much as you like the acquiring the thing?
I do enjoy the hunt. I do enjoy. I like a little wheeling and dealing. I like to get in the fray and go back and forth, go toe to toe with a real tough cookie. I do enjoy the hunt, and I like I can order stuff. I can order stuff, and that's fine. But when I find the right thing, like there is something, some dopamine rush that I get. My brain lights up like a Christmas tree, and I go, that's the thing. That's what I've always wanted. So yeah, I do like that, but even more so, I do like rescuing. I do like rescuing something that's been neglected, something that's needed work for a while and somebody doesn't want anymore. I do take pride in that part of it as well. So yeah, I'm not as keen to order a neck with whatever specs, you know, I get into the weeds on specs when really what I want is a vintage Fender Maple Rosewood thing. Like that's
right.
Nothing fancy. So yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll talk about specs in the Patreon episode, but I noticed that, like, you know exactly the nut width you like. You know exactly the things you want. And I really love that about you, and, like, I wish I could be that person, whereas, like, I'm like, put it in my hands. I'll know if I like it or not. Yeah. Like, I genuinely don't know.
Well, that's why I know, is that I've put so many in my hands. I've played thousands upon thousands of vintage Jazz Masters and Jaguars. So, like, I know exactly the specs that work best for me. So,
yeah, no, that sounds right. Well, awesome. Well, we're going to head over to Patreon. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast and hanging out.
Yeah, I'm so thrilled to be here. Thanks for talking to me, Philip.
We'll have to do it again for sure. I can already tell, because there's obviously so much more Star Trek to talk, and we need to. I mean, we got to get to Deep Space Nine, and we
got
to get to.
Got it.
I mean, yeah, it's Jake. A whole thing.
love Cisco.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings, but that's okay. We'll talk about that on another time. I know that shocked face.
How dare you speak ill of our emissary?
That should be the thumbnail, but it's not going to be, because I do a different thing entirely. But anyway, listeners, thank you so much for your support. Listening, Patreons, thank you for your support. I appreciate it a whole bunch. Thank you for listening every week, especially if you do listen every week. In the meantime, though, y'all know where to find me. Click all the things, come over to Discord. But until we talk next time, be good to yourselves, be kind to each other, and make some noise. This episode is brought to you by the supporters of 40 Watt Podcast over on Patreon. Go over to patreon.com/40wattpodcast, where for as little as $3 per month, you can help support the podcast and get every episode ad-free. For $5 a month, you'll get every episode ad-free, as well as a bonus episode every week. I can't overstate how thankful I am for the support of my patrons, and hope you'll consider joining the team and helping keep this show on the road.